Hola, my name is Elias Torres, host of the American Dream Podcast. On this show, I talk to underrepresented founders and seasoned executives who have achieved their versions of the American Dream. We discover their origin stories, their career trajectories, and the biggest lessons learned. This is the final episode of season 3, and I am thrilled to wrap the season with Harold Castro, Director of International Controllership for Walmart. On this episode, Harold shares why he pivoted from a career in aviation to a career in accounting, the value he's found in giving and receiving direct feedback, and his reality of trying to be himself in a corporate world. Please jump in into the very honest conversation.
Nice to have you here, Harold, on the show, American Dream.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's actually a pleasure for myself and an honor to get to meet you as well. You have a very storied past and background, and it was very nice that we were able to connect today.
I'm fascinated by, especially with AI, like the only thing that matters now is our story. And so I love when people tell stories, especially when they're Latinos, you know. So tell me a little bit more about your background. Where are you from?
Yeah, so originally I was born in DR, Dominican Republic, many, many years ago now.
Where?
In San Cristobal. It's 30 minutes outside the capital. So my whole family's still there. Most of my family lives there still. We have a couple of uncles that moved out. But like the spore of many of us, I ended up moving to Puerto Rico for some time because you were able to get your citizenship at the time and take the test in Spanish and things like that. So it was a little simpler back in the day. I spent some time in Puerto Rico. I would say I spent about 8 years in Puerto Rico. So I moved there when I was about six. And like most Caribbean folks, I ended up made my way to New York. Yes,
that's what they call New Yorkians. What are they called?
New Yorkians, Dominicans, and I actually ended up in Long Island, out of all places, not the Bronx, because like we had a family member that we knew and a family acquaintance, and they settled in Long Island, not the classic Bronx in the city. And you know, you go to Long Island, you go to the suburbs, you think it's going to be beautiful, and you know, you think Long Island, the Hamptons, and it was not.
I only know the Hamptons.
Yeah.
You lived in the Hamptons?
No, I'm saying it was not like the Hamptons. But it was much nicer than Puerto Rico, because at the time Puerto Rico was going through some difficult times itself with the drugs in the 90s, and so it was much safer for us in New York. Not speaking English was tough, right? Like most of us when we migrate. So I was lucky enough to land in a neighborhood that had English as a second language as one of the offerings for students. And
that was not normal?
It depends on the in there. You know, if you end up in a predominantly white neighborhood, the chances of you having an ESL class are going to be very little. I think to this day, that's one of the chances, right? So the demographics were there were a lot of Hispanics in the area. It was the first time, it's embarrassing to say, but it was the first time that I learned that, you know, about Salvadorians and Central Americans and Mexicans. You know, you only saw it from watching TV. And it was the first time in my life that I was exposed to other cultures, Latin cultures, and how different they were and unique. So it was a cool opportunity to not only see America, experience America, but also connect with other Latin American aspects and people and understand and get the culture. So I came around junior high, which is the years you start forming yourself and maturing. So it was challenging. I mean, I went from being called wetback to, you know, all kind of names. And the whole time I was there, my mom was working minimum wage jobs. You know, my mother, she had by the time, you know, it was single mother. So it was just her and us. And through that time, I realized how hard she was working. And I started thinking in my head, man, I don't want to work that hard. Was the way out, and it was studying and getting good grades. So I managed to have good teachers that helped me throughout and helped me stay focused, you know, even though there was gang violence and drugs and everywhere. And some of my friends were in...
Where is this in Long Island?
Central Islip, New York, and Brentwood, New York. So if you Google it, you see it.
Park, East Hampton, South.
Yeah, so it was a unique experience in high school and growing up. But I always had that mindset of like, hey, I want to do something different. I want to better myself. I want to work harder, less not as hard as my mom is. And that led me to start to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. Took some vocational classes and ended up realizing that I wanted to do aviation. And ended up enrolling myself on summer school so I would have enough free time in my schedule my junior and senior year that I could just go to vocational school. And the whole time I'm ashamed to say it. I also, you know, lied and went to start working. I was like below age, like at 13, because I was a bigger guy. So through working, going to school, getting ready, I was fortunate enough to get accepted into the program. I started vocational school my junior year in high school and started flying planes. And I thought that was going to be it. That's going to be my career, my life, right? As I finished my senior year in high school, I realized, like, hey, you know, in order to be a pilot, like, you need financial support. It's not something that, yes, you could take a bunch of loans out, but coming from a poor family, nobody was going to lend me money, right? So I started talking to my teachers. They helped me apply to different schools. I got accepted to a local school to go to their aviation program. But even then, it was just, you know, you have your school and then you have your flight hours. And it was just an insurmountable challenge. And inside of me, I was hesitant to follow that dream and that passion. And I kind of said, hey, let's be realistic. I can't graduate college and not have a job. And that makes decent amount of money. Because pretty much I got to help my mom. I got to, you know, I got to have hope for myself. My brother was also going to college at the same time. So what I decided to do was open up a career book, because I had learned that there's this such thing as a career book back in the day. And it gives you all the careers, potential earnings, and went to the library and opened it up. And I was like, all right, what pays the most graduate in college? And, you know, obviously it was engineering. And it was undergrad, not grad school. So it was engineering, accounting, finance. And then I'm like, all right, great. I know I went to not the greatest high school, so my math wasn't great. So I know engineering was out of the question. But I was like, I don't know what finance is or accounting. Never heard of this. Let's figure this out. And that shows you how good my high school was, that I had no idea what those careers were. I grabbed the syllabus for both of those. You went to the register office, hey, can I get a syllabus for finance and a syllabus for accounting? And literally, I rolled the dice on which one had less math. Accounting. Accounting had less math, man. And that's how I ended up in accounting.
How bad those two careers are that you're like, accounting has less math.
Yes. So I ended up picking accounting, and that was the path. Because, I mean, to take a step back, my family, my uncles in DR, they were engineers, and they were, but I talked to them, but I never sat with them. I said, hey, can you help me through my career? Because I was in a different world to them. I was in the U.S., completely different, like, dynamic. They had no idea how to help me. And my mom barely finished sixth grade. So it's not like I could sit with her, hey, mom, can you show me how to navigate this? I could have talked to my teachers. My teachers were also, they knew about teaching. They couldn't necessarily guide me through all that. So the decision was up to me to figure out. And that's how I made the decision myself. And I went down that path and ended up transferring schools. So the original school that I went to I figured it wasn't the best accounting school in the area. And I was also thinking, hey, I need to go to a decent school that when I graduate, we're going to have recruiters that are going to give me a job. And I was smart enough to look into the schools that had good recruiting teams. Like, they had offices for recruiting. So I was like, all right, cool, let me go there. Transfer schools, started my college journey again in a new school. And let's just say accounting was not easy for me at the beginning. So it wasn't like I was getting a 4.0. But what I did realize is, what can I do to differentiate myself and supplement that I don't have a perfect GPA? And what I did was I joined, the accounting society, the accounting clubs. I became like a super accounting nerd, and I focused on that, and I doubled down in accounting. And that's what, ultimately led me to the relationships, to meet people, meet the recruiters, and start my career journey when I graduated. I ended up getting offers from all the big four firms and picked the one that I thought was going to be the most career fulfillment, and went that way. But that's like a quick blur before I got to my professional career.
You're Latino. You talk nonstop.
Yeah.
You're like me. Almost nobody gives you advice, even the well-off people, right?
Yeah.
They might not have the person tell them this and this. They simply, I think we just learn by osmosis, right? We just see something. Like, to me, I would see people constructing like a wall or like a house, and then in Nicaragua, and they would be ingenieros, right?
Yeah.
And so that's where I learned what an engineer was that's all I knew. It's the civil engineer that would build a wall. And then that's who they said, but I never talked to one, right. And then I like computers. So then when I heard the word computer engineering, I was like, I like computers and I like the word engineer. But that's all I knew.
Yeah.
And then when I actually went to college, my best friend in Tampa for like a year, he was dead set he wanted to be an accountant. His father was a mechanic, a BMW mechanic in Ecuadorian. And he just said, I want to be an accountant. He was obsessed with accounting and banking and this and dressing up. And so I was like, I'll go with you. And I literally followed him and we got accepted into the accounting program on the first day of school in Tampa. And God forbid, that's not for me.
Yeah.
But I did that for like the first 2 years. And then I switched to management information systems.
Wow.
But
that's impressive.
I wasn't good for computer science. Though. I was also not that prepared. I don't know why. The problem is that sometimes we make fun of hard things,
yeah,
and we create and we tell influence each other to not want to do great things.
100%. 100%. I agree with you on that. And that
it was always like in the Latino crew, we were always like, take the easiest classes, like you said,
do marketing, do criminal justice, you know, and then. If you really want to do it, that's great. But nowadays it's difficult because what I try to tell people nowadays is a degree is an investment that you're making and you have to have something that pays that back in the future unless you have an innate talent to do something different and grow it, right? So to me, it's very challenging.
Yeah. Because now that system, that dream has crumbled, right?
Yeah.
Just because you study anything doesn't mean you're going to get any job.
I agree.
So it's hard. That's what I mean. The
it's
whole
a hard part, decision.
It's like the whole thing that you said is like, oh, how do we coach young people?
Yeah.
To pick a major. And to execute the journey on that, I have no words. It's the hardest thing.
It is. I agree. And you know what? During my undergrad, I feel like I had a good vision. And as I've gotten older in my career, that vision has faded a little bit. And I'm still trying to recover that vision of long-term what I want to do. And I'll walk through it really quick. I graduated. I knew I wanted to work in Latin America. Something in me said, hey, I missed that connection. I want to do it. And I went to work in hedge funds in New York, and I did auditing, right? Like it's basic accounting. You go in and you're working on hedge funds. You're doing auditing. I didn't love it. It was kind of like, oh, this is not fun. I was working a million hours. Classic initial accounting career in New York. I was going to Manhattan. It was, you know, a cool experience, but I missed that Latin American connection. I was fortunate enough that I reached in the internal page for the company I worked for. There was an opening in Mexico City. And I was like, oh, Mexico City. Like, you know, from like I told you, I see Mexico City from Televisa and, you know, the telenovelas. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm enamored with it. I want to go. And the recession hits 2008. And I literally was in the Lehman Building before it closed the week after. The week before that, I was in that building in a connection with Latinos that we had. Latinos, it was Dominicans in Wall Street, and we met there. Funny enough, and then this opportunity for Mexico just materialized out of nowhere. And I was like, hey, let me try this. Let me pursue this. I talked to my wife. You know, everybody was like, you know, all you saw was men on fire, and everybody was scared of me going to Mexico. And I'm like, I'm just going to go. And I took a trip down there, loved the team. Again, reconnected with Latin America in a ways that I would never imagine. My boss was from the Canary Islands in Spain. My other supervisor was from Venezuela. I got a guy from Argentina, a lady from Puerto Rico, a bunch of people across from Mexico from all over, you know, and that was the team I was working with. I ended up loving it. But to take a quick step back, my career in hasn't been a stellar career, I would say. Like when I was in New York, I struggled. You know, the corporate America that I thought I was getting into, that my parents, my mom had told me about, you know, work hard and it'll pay off and all that, wasn't necessarily what I was seeing. I was working really hard, but the peers next to me were the ones rising and I was staying steady. And I was like, what's going on? One, nobody was giving me feedback. I was happy. I was Harold. Everybody loved me. Harold's the best guy ever. You know, I was a charming guy that walks in the room and lights up the room. But my work wasn't perfect because I don't know what I was doing and nobody was coaching me. But guess what? Everybody around me was getting coached and getting good feedback and they were growing and I wasn't. And that made me open up my eyes a little bit. So it was a blessing that this opportunity came to move to Mexico. I ended up with the same company switching to Mexico and starting my career over. And I excelled in Mexico. You know what? In Mexico, these people took care of me. And they were like, hey, we want you to be better. This is when you're sucking. And they would tell me live. They would be like, hey, you need to fix this. Tomorrow, I want to see you do better. I want you to do this. And this is what you're going to work on. This is what I need you to study. This is what I need you to learn. And I grew as a professional faster than I would have ever done in the U.S. because they helped nurture me, right? I don't know if it was the cultural aspect. I don't know if it was a connection. It was the directness. It takes an aptitude for somebody to sit down with you and tell you directly what you're doing wrong, right? There's no sugarcoating. And I love that. Because he gave me a chance to work on it and fix myself. I spent 3 years in Mexico, and that was, to me, the best time I spent in my career, professional career and development. because I grew the most. I grew the most, and it was sad that I had to, you know, as a comment comes to an end, and you come to back to the States, and I came to the States again, and I started my career in Miami. Never been in my life to Miami, but the other thing I learned was having a good network helps, and I started learning that when I was in Mexico, not in New York. In New York, my peers knew how to build a network, and that network was helping them get better and improve and grow. I learned that when I was in Mexico, that network helps. And you know what the network did for me? It was giving me a position in Miami. That what was like, hey, I don't want to go back to New York. By that time, I had two kids. I want to do something different. And they were like, hey, we'll take you to Miami. You'll be a great fit. We love your attitude. You're a hardworking individual, and you speak Spanish. So come to Miami. I ended up in Miami, and it was great. It was a good reconnecting back to the U.S., the corporate culture. I saw it again. I saw the same challenge. Now I'm in Bentonville, Arkansas. I'll tell you how I got there. I ended up moving, like, careers, switching careers, made the decision to leave accounting and public accounting. In that time, I got my CPA. Like you said, I was surrounded by people that made the exam seem very difficult, and I pushed it off too long. And then I finally, they sat me down. He's like, hey, in order to get promoted to manager, you got to take it. And that's when I sat down. I said, hey, something hard, I'm just going to do it. And I pushed through it, studied, you know, worked a ton of hours and studied and passed. And left the firm, went to Royal Caribbean for a little bit, had a great time in that company as well. Great connection, incredible group of people.
Which one?
Royal Caribbean. Okay. I was in Royal Caribbean in Miami. And then out of nowhere, I got another random opportunity came up on LinkedIn to move to Walmart. And at the time, it was, you know, Miami was tough. It's a great city, but it's difficult with the family. So we decided to take the plunge and come to Arkansas. And then we came here. So we ended up in Arkansas 8 years ago. I came here and been here ever since. Yep. 8 years.
So many lessons that you're distilling that I think you just hit me. I just took a note. You know, I'm going to write a LinkedIn post on feedback. I'm going to steal everything you just said. That is so true.
It's so superficial. And that's one of the things that I hate that have hindered my career as well. Because look, yes, I am at Walmart. I am a director at Walmart. I'm proud of where I am. I'm proud of where I came from. Do I have professional aspirations that I haven't achieved? Yes. Some of it is my own doing because of how I behaved in a meeting, maybe because of how I acted. But the problem is nobody has been willing to give me that direct feedback to make me better, right? It's this superficial discussion. You're doing great. You're doing great. You're doing great. But when push comes to shove and you want to, for example, in your engineering example early on where you want to stop digging the hole and you want to put the white hat on and direct digging the hole, sometimes people don't tell you why not, right? They just tell you, hey, you're doing a great job digging those holes. Keep digging that hole. You're incredible at it. You're the best we got. But I don't want to take the holes anymore. I want to put the white hat and I want to direct. I don't want to support others. I want to keep growing professionally and personally, right? And that's when the challenge to me comes in where I don't do that to people anymore. If I see you struggling and doing something that could make you better, I will give you that feedback and I will give you time to improve. So you could show me that you really want that white hat or whether you just want to be digging the hole, which is okay, right? Like if that's what you want, that is fine. That's a career choice that you make. That's a life choice that you make. But if you want to grow, and I'm able to help you grow, I will do that for you. Because that's one of the things that I miss the most about working in Latin America, when people actually said that to you directly and invested in you for your growth. I know for a fact that sometimes, you know, my upbringing might not be a reflection of a corporate environment where you can't be as direct to solve an issue. And my mindset is, I'm going to solve the issue because I have an issue to solve, and that's my job. As opposed to others that think differently. They might say, I have an issue to solve. But how do I manage around the conflict and make it as seamless as possible without creating too much animosity as I go through the process? It might take me longer to get there. I might not get there, but at least I have a path that I didn't create too much friction. As opposed to me, when I came up with a different upbringing, which is like, hey, your hard work will get you there. And your hard work means work hard, which sometimes translates to like, hey, let's get this done as quickly as possible and efficiently, might not translate well in a corporate environment, right? Sometimes it's that. The other thing is too, personalities, you know, sometimes personalities don't fit a certain environment that you're in. And even though people will be with you and love you because of your personality, sometimes that personality itself will hinder your growth, right? Because they might not see you as that, you know, a feedback that I got early on in my career when I moved here to Walmart was you don't have executive presence. And maybe we'll.
Hold on. I'm getting upset.
Yeah.
I think that, fuck that, right? I think that, I think it's complicated, right? It's I think that we're, I don't want to say, no, our personality is just fine. You know what I mean? There is nothing wrong with the Latino personality. I think it's not the personality. I think there's a difference between feedback. I want to make sure we separate this. Yeah. There's a difference when somebody tells us, Elias, you're too loud, versus you did not do a good job of communicating with the customer the requirements, and you did not do a good job leading that situation there. You did not do a good job of delivering this feature, right? Yep. So two different types of feedback, right? The one that talks about my personality, they can go suck an egg. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's they have no personality. I know I'm going to give them feedback about their lack of personality. And so it's like, if you say to me, like, I don't have executive presence, I think if somebody comes and coaches, like, we have a daily meeting in my company. If you come and you come and analyze my meeting, right? I just had one today. We have it every day. Some people might be like, what a disaster of a leader he is as a CEO of this company. I'll give you a moment, right? A person was showed this feature that they just fixed and built, and he's demoing it. And I go, okay, but we need to do this, this, and this, and this. I said, like, that was not working, right? And so I stopped and I said, okay, I'm sorry. Let me go back. Great job, you know.
Yeah.
Great job, Ange. Well done, AG, you know. And I said, this is fantastic. And everybody's laughing, right?
Yeah.
Because, see, I'm correcting myself to not be so intense to just focus on anything. I give him some praise, but then everybody's laughing that it doesn't matter and that it's me, and that actually they're praising the fact that I'm focusing on higher level execution.
Yeah.
And so some coach would be like, could come and criticize me and says, I have no EQ, I am not fitting to their culture, right. I'm not this, blah, 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 my culture is too much, I'm too rude, I'm too in your face, too aggressive, blah, blah. But another coach would be like, holy shit, his EQ is so high that he's regulating himself and pushing and leading the team to a higher standard and execution, right?
Yeah. I'll give you an example with that feedback that they gave me. You know what I did with that feedback? We have a Latino network internally, right? And we put on a Hispanic Heritage Month every month. So my goal was, okay, you know what? I'm going to make sure that when I host that event myself, I'm going to host it 1 year. And that's the year that our CEO is going to come in and he's going to be the opening remarks for the whole event. That's what I did. I worked the network until I could, and I got the CEO to come in to that event. Shook my hand. After I did the Walmart cheer, obviously, you know, shook my hand, help write his opening remarks with his team. And then I went back to my leadership. I was like, you know what? Who doesn't have, do I have executive presence? I didn't tell him directly, but that's what I did. I'm like, hey, look at this great note from the CEO about the great work that I did for our event for Hispanic Heritage Day, right? And then it's like, now what are you going to tell me? That I don't have executive presence in front of the guy that runs the company? Yeah. You know?
This is just judgment and criticism that are not helpful, right?
Exactly.
Tell me what we need is decode. There's all this, I would call them racist, right? But there's this discriminatory phrases that people will say to us.
Yeah.
You don't have executive presence. What does that mean? Like, I'm not, like, you know, 6'2", skinny, white collar, you know, nice eyes or something and wearing a blazer. Like, or is it because I don't, lead, I don't coach, I don't make the right decisions, I don't take risks, I don't deal with the critical situations in a specific way. We need to be able to push back and say to people, can you help me, please? Can you explain that further?
Right? And that is exactly the way, I know one of the things I wanted to cover a little bit was our call to action. That is one of the items that I focus myself on making sure that I do for others. I try to help them, one, first listen to what their potential career goal is. And I've been blessed enough that I got a chance to meet a lot of young Latinos that come through our company, whether it's an intern, whether they're a first year associate, whether they're growing with the company. And I sit with them, it's like, what do you want to get out of your career? And then I have that conversation with them. Talk to me about how you're working on an everyday basis. And I give them that unfiltered feedback. Hey, in the environment that you're in, I think it will be best served if you're more conservative. In the environment you're in, you're a very social person. Use that social to connect with people and develop a network of where you want to grow, right? So that feedback, where it's useful feedback, is what I focus myself on doing. I hope others are able to do the same, right? Don't just give that superficial feedback to somebody that you care about or somebody you're trying to help, because it really, at the end, all it does is makes you feel better that you said something and you quote unquote gave feedback, but did you really help that individual? So that's something I really wanted people to understand and articulate and take and internalize it, work with it, and help others. Because what ends up happening is the people that need that feedback and are getting that feedback start going to the fringes and to the outside. And they start going to the outside. And then they internalize and they feel like they're always doing something wrong. And they're never able to fix it. So to me, it's like, bring them back in.
That spiral.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then they feel like, I get the messages, right? And they're like, I switched jobs. I'm at this job. I'm not growing. I'm not getting feedback. And I'm doing everything worse and worse and worse until you get kicked out.
Right. I agree 100% with you. And I've seen it. I see it.
And so I think that, I think to me, in general, we definitely have to be smart of where we get hired. That's why the network. So overall, we need more Latinos. The thing is that we have a numbers game, but we just need to, you and me, where in places like this, we can help people, right? To place them in places where they might be welcome. But the issue is that, to me, I would always say to people, be themselves, right? Be yourself. Not like, where do you fit in? You might land in a difficult place that no matter what you do, you're doomed.
Yes.
But the idea to me is be yourself, but you have to learn how to flex it, how to calibrate.
Right. And that comes with experience and others helping you get there and doing that.
Exactly. Which I don't have. I'm still the same rambunctious aggressive. That my problem is that I'm going the wrong route. I'm leaning on it so hard. But for example, I had a big brand that wants to try my software, and they're like, it has to be like this, it has to be like this. Don't pay you for the pilot. We're not gonna do this, it has to be on-prem. And I just reply, can't do it, won't do on-prem. I'm like, goodbye. They came back and they're like, okay, we'll make an exception for on-prem. But we'll put you through more security. Fine with me, but I'm not changing my platform just for because you're a big brand, right? Or like, I was talking to a guy today and he's like, we're trying to expand it and a customer, and the guy's like, well, you're missing all these I want this feature, this feature, this feature, this feature, this feature. And then the funny thing is, like, nobody's doing those features anywhere. I know that, right? And then I'm like, first of all, you're like trying the product for free, mine. And second, that's not what I do. I'm doing this. And I'm just pushing back. And then the guy's, okay, we're going to come back, circle back, and decide what we do. And I'm like, I just want to check how smart you are. I'm not charging you for this. I'm offering you to just connect it so you help the rest of your team to get more data about the customer. You don't have to use it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, why is this so hard to make? He was dying laughing. But I'm doubling down on who I am and realizing that. I just told that to somebody. You got to learn how to push back more.
Right. And that's key. Because I don't do that myself.
Exactly.
I am still the type that is still, even though I'm very humble, I'm thankful for what I get. I was like, I get what I get. I don't get upset. I'm thankful. But at the same time, I should be more, I should push more. But here's where the culture aspect comes in. And it's challenging because it's a two-edged sword. If you push more, sometimes you're perceived as you're creating conflict, right?
No. This is what we have to break the mold.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Is like, I am so successful. I am so confident. I don't give a shit about anybody in the whole world. I have achieved everything, right? So I can go and demand and ask, because you know what? Everybody demands of me.
Yes. Everybody.
People come to me and they ask me to do things for free. People ask me to give them jobs. People ask me to do work for them. People ask me to do an intro. People ask me to invest in their company. People ask me to do a reference. Everybody just asks. Nobody comes and says, what can I do for you? Like, people are like, can you invest $250,000 in my fund? And I'm like, I already invested the first round. Now they want second round. And like, what have you done for me ever since I gave you that money? And so if everybody asks like that of me, why can I ask in the same way?
I agree with you 100%. And that is something that
we need to teach the Latinos. Push back and know your worth, yes. Because you'd be amazed. Because you know what? Everybody else does it.
100%. And people that is
entitled, and they ask for shit. Like, good.
Bye. And I'll put it to you this way. I am more open to that discussion now than I was historically in the past when I went for an interview, for example. And this is what I tell the people that I mentor, right? When they come and ask me, hey, what do you think about this position? Should I apply for it? It's like, great. Yeah, apply for it. Sounds like it'll fit great for you. But also ask your supervisors. It's not just what you're giving them, but what are they going to do for you to grow, right? What are they going to help you bring to, like, help you get better at where you have a hole in your game and you want to fill it, right? It's no longer going to be just this discussion like, I'm thankful for the opportunity. It's like, yes, you're thankful for the opportunity, but what are they also going to do to make you successful? It's not a one-way street anymore.
There's no right. Yeah. And so.
Yeah.
That's the only way we get more. It's like the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Now, for me, here's one thing I'm coming now when I'm in like a mid-career, thinking about me and myself and what I define as success. And that's one of the struggles I go through the most. And I tell people that the faster you can define that for yourself, the happier you're going to be. Because that's going to look very different for all of us, right? Success for me 5 years ago was I want to be a vice president in whatever company. But that changes over time. Now, hey, what is that success look to me? When I tell you early on that I'm still kind of like in this fuzzy stage where I don't know what I want, is do I want more flexibility? Do I want more time to spend with my family? What do I want? You know, do I want to pursue? Do I have the hunger to push again, right? And defining that early on to me is important as an individual because it gives you a peace of mind. And revisiting that once in a while and say, hey, am I still, is that answer still the same? Is something that I'm going through and get learning.
My advice to you is, why not both?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. The mentality that we have is that you're still having the bad mentality. Oh, it can only be one or the other. I see other people that come to me and they're like, I want a job that pays me the same $500,000 but works less. That's what I hear.
Yeah.
It's like, I want a job where I don't want to travel. I live out of Maine, and so I want to still be CEO, but I only want to now go 1 week out of the month traveling, not the other ones. I need to stay close to my family because I like how I live in Maine. It's like, oh wow, you can ask those things. So you can be a vice president that gains more flexibility than you have today.
Yeah.
I'm just saying you have to ask.
Yes.
It you are self-limiting yourself by saying, oh, if I want more flexibility with my kids. And no, you choose how you get more flexibility with your kids. For example, what if you worked harder with your kids but made more money, and now you can hire and solve a whole bunch of stuff in the house, and now you come home and you're just able to have dinner with a private chef in your home?
Right.
Is it more quality time? You know what I'm saying? It's like more quality time and to each its own, right? But it's like,
yeah.
But
it's a different thought process of getting to an answer.
It's different thought process. Is that there is more options, not the ones that you're only used to seeing, right?
Right.
It's like, you know, what if you say, I want to be vice president of this section, but I only want to work 4 days a week?
Yeah.
I don't know. But
people ask, and how do you make it happen?
Yeah. So, muchas gracias. I love this. This is
makes you think, right? Like when you're having conversations at different stages, right? Like I think for me, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Definitely learned a lot today. It's great when you have a thoughtful discussion and you mutually learn something and take some tidbits from each other as you go through it, right?
I think you articulated some fundamental issues, and you hit the nail on the head on the root of the problem, some of the stuff that that's the whole point of the podcast is that we're putting this out there, we're recording and we're putting so for people can be like, learn from it, because our culture as an immigrant culture, like I'm still humble. Like I go meet a customer and I know when I'm in front of a customer, I'm at their service.
Yeah.
Right.
And you're creating a channel to meet people like me, right? That not every day, you know, you get a chance to speak to somebody as accomplished as you, right?
Yeah. But we went through the same things. We're learning the same problems. We have the same problem. And there's so many behind us that will have this.
Right.
And that's the whole point of it. So thank you very much, man. That was awesome. Elias,
it's a pleasure, and love to stay connected and reach out soon.
Thank you for listening to the American Dream Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss when a new episode drops every other Tuesday.